You're listening to the Ayn Rand Institute Live podcast series.
Perspectives on an Intellectual Career with Adam Mossoff. This lecture was recorded as part of Ayn Rand Conference Global's How to Put a Dent in the Universe, a conference examining an intellectual's role in society and how it can shape the world.
Thank you. It's a real pleasure to be here today or this evening or in the morning, wherever you may be and may be watching this. My name is Adam Mossoff. As Keith said, I'm a professor of law at Antonin Scalia Law School at George Mason University. I will try to talk slowly. I am notorious for talking very quickly, very passionate and energetic person generally. And so I will try to speak a little more slowly. I apologize if I do not succeed in my efforts. As a law professor, I'm a bit of an unusual academic animal, so to speak, because I have kind of one foot in the academic world and one foot in the legal world, because I'm also a law professor. I'm a lawyer as well. And so I'm going to be talking a little bit about what that entails and how I do things in addition to the kind of the traditional academic activities of research, writing, and teaching. But first, I want to talk a little bit about my kind of my story and my progression of how I ended up becoming a law professor. I was introduced to Ayn Rand when I was a teenager and became immediately interested in her philosophy and its application to the real world. And it keyed into a general interest that I had at that time and has run throughout my entire professional life, of being very interested in the practical application of theoretical ideas, both in our individual lives and in society more generally. And so when I first went to college as an undergraduate, I actually was majoring not in philosophy, and I did not think of myself as pursuing an academic career. I was actually majoring in economics, political science, and international affairs. And it wasn't until actually I took a course in legal philosophy that I discovered, wow, this is an area of philosophy that I really enjoy, because at once it started to become very real to me that I could actually spend time exploring and discussing the ways that abstract ideas and moral theory and political theory, and even in more foundational ideas in philosophy and metaphysics, epistemology, can be applied in designing real-world institutions and real-world laws and immediately impact people's lives. And I also was participating in Objectivist Club at that time and was doing some writing and doing some presentations in the Objectivist Club on philosophy. And I discovered that I really loved research, writing, and teaching, getting up and presenting ideas, sharing my knowledge with other people. And of course, research, writing, and teaching, as you heard from people like Professor Smith and Professor Thompson and others, is kind of the core activities of what you do as an academic day in, day out. If you don't love doing research, doing writing, and doing teaching, you won't love being an academic. And I discovered I love this, and I love legal philosophy. So I changed my major. I switched over to philosophy, specializing in legal philosophy. I entered into a PhD program, actually, in philosophy, preparing myself to become a philosopher specializing in jurisprudence or legal philosophy. And at the time, I was also studying objectivism more formally. I was a member of the inaugural class of what was then called the Objectivist Graduate Center in 1993. It's the precursor to the Objectivist Academic Center today. I had the privilege of studying under Leonard Peikoff and Harry Binswanger and Peter Schwartz, and they provided me incalculable training. It prepared me for my current career in so many ways. They made me a much more rigorous thinker, more analytical, less emotional, less susceptible to conventional ways of thinking and conventional ideas. And even more importantly, as you heard from the prior panelists, they taught me writing skills that I had never learned anywhere else. Peter Schwartz was just a tremendous influence on me in making my writing much more effective, much more clear, and much more dramatic and compelling. And I could never satisfy him. You know, I would fix a couple problems that he had identified, and he would say, great, now I can address all the other problems that I couldn't get to because you had these other problems that were more pressing and fundamental. And but constantly getting that kind of good constructive criticism back from him really made me excel and improved my capabilities. And so both in the OGC and what would now be the OAC with Ankur Gatte and Keith Lockich and Aaron Smith, you will get incalculable intellectual and writing training. And it will prepare you for whatever career you wish to go into, whether it's to become an academic, whether it's to become a public intellectual more generally, whether it's to become a business person. And it was essential to preparing me for becoming a law professor. And speaking of becoming a law professor, well, how did I become a law professor if I was in philosophy? Well, I became dissatisfied with academic philosophy. I enjoyed my classes. I was taking in law school while I was in philosophy program. I was registering in the law school to take law school courses, and I was enjoying my conversations with law students and law professors much more than I was enjoying my conversations and learning from my fellow philosophy professors and philosophy graduate students. I found the law to be much more open and honest place of kind of intellectual dialogue. And because it was law school, people were really interested and concerned about the real world. And there was always a focus on, well, okay, this is an interesting idea, but why does it matter in the real world, in the way we shape or design or are running our current political institutions or our private institutions like corporations, or the laws that govern our day-to-day lives. And so I left my PhD program. I discovered that I was on the wrong side of the academic divide, and I really wanted to be a law professor. I could do everything that I wanted to do. I could research, write, teach, and I could be an academic, and I could be engaged with the real world as a law professor. And by the way, the moral of this story, and one of the reasons why I'm telling you this, is because you need to be open to exploring and trying different things. Notice I switched my degrees as an undergraduate. I even switched my focus of my studies and graduate studies. Because you can't deduce a priori what you're going to be doing as a career. You can't know what your passionate values will be. Values are the concrete things that you enjoy pursuing. The research, writing, teaching, if you're an academic, developing a business plan, if you're a business person like John Allison. And so you can't know that until you do those things and discover whether you love them and whether it's something that you're passionate about. So try different things. And if that's not working out, then just switch over. You're young, you have your whole life ahead of you. And the important thing is to be happy and to be successful in what you're doing. And so I switched over to law, and I'm a geek. And so, of course, I immediately fell in love with intellectual property theory with a focus on patents. I mean, intellectual property is a fascinating field. You study how new values are created, inventions, new artistic works, movies, business models, trademarks, and how they're defined and protected in the law. And these are the values that have revolutionized society commercially, socially, economically. And, you know, the Industrial Revolution and the personal computer revolution and the biotech revolution, all of the great, incredible medical treatments we have, like our COVID-19 vaccines, the mobile revolution, you know, with our smartphones. And of course, now next generation technologies like artificial intelligence, 5G, Internet of Things. This is the world that I am immersed in day in, day out in my studies. And as an objectivist, I found I had a competitive advantage specializing in intellectual property, you know, in the same sense that John Allison and Matt Bateman talked about in the last panel. I understood the unique role of man's mind in creating these values that make possible a flourishing human life and a thriving free society. And so, you know, by the way, as an aside, it's not a coincidence that Ayn Rand's heroes are innovators and creators themselves. You know, Howard Roark, the architect, Hank Reardon, he's not just a business person. He invented Reardon metal. He had a patent. And of course, John Galt, the great physicist who invents the an engine, and then that could cure their that you know that will power the world again after they return back. And as an objectivist, I saw that the fundamental moral justification for intellectual property, that it wasn't just economics, it just wasn't just kind of a practical justification that we have these out of pure necessity. I was able to see how intellectual property is fundamentally about securing the fruits of the productive labors of inventors and artists and all the creators and innovators who make life possible in human society. And thus I understood how intellectual property integrates with capitalism, how it's a key property right in a free market. Venture capitalists rely on intellectual property to make investment decisions in new startups and other types of new companies. And how, like all the property rights, intellectual property is a platform, it's a launch pad for innovative commercial developments by capitalists in developing new business models. And so great inventors in history, Isaac Singer, the Singer Sewing Machine Company, and Cyrus McCormick, who invents the first mechanized harvester, and Samuel Morse, who invented the first telegraph in the 19th century, and Charles Goodyear figured out how to make rubber, a feasible, workable product. These weren't just great innovators. They were great business persons. They invented whole new business models to deploy their products in the marketplace on the basis of their property rights. They created the franchise business model and licensing programs and lease programs, installment purchase programs, and customer guarantees, all the things that we now take for granted are part and parcel of our commercial societies. They created and innovated and were innovators in creating, and on the basis of their property rights and their innovations and their creations. Now, as a result of my ability to kind of see this and integrate these historical data, this factual data, the legal data, and the philosophical data, I was, you know, my scholarship is very unique, and it presents this kind of integrated moral picture of why we should protect innovators and creators. And as a result, it's had an impact. My scholarship is widely read and cited by current legal and political authorities. You know, law professors, we strive to have and to see our work cited by judges. I can actually directly have an impact in someone's life in the here and now with the work I do as a law professor by influencing a judge as to how they should decide a case. And I've very luckily had that opportunity. I've seen the United States Supreme Court justices cite to my work, quote me. Many other courts have also cited and relied on my work as an academic. I've also had my work cited in legal briefs filed by the United States Department of Justice and in the reports that have been done at the United States Patent and Trademark Office and other agencies throughout the U.S. federal government. But I also want to do me more than just writing articles and trying to influence judges and other legal decision makers through my kind of academic theoretical work. I really wanted to engage much more in direct debates on the ground, the legal debates, the policy debates about how and why we have intellectual property and how and why we protect these and why we should continue to protect them, because they've been under attack like all of our rights today in property and contract and liberty. And so I founded an academic center at my law school called the Center for the Protection of Intellectual Property, along with several other professors. And we fostered a whole community of scholars who shared this belief that we had in the key importance of intellectual property to a growing innovation economy and creating ultimately a flourishing society. And it was massively successful. I stepped away from it a couple of years ago, but in the first 8 years that we ran it, you know, we did about 55 conferences and roundtables and symposia and other types of events. We were ultimately responsible for the publication of approximately 180 law journal articles and several books. Scholars associated with this community, this network that we created, published ultimately about 320 op-eds and various essays and other articles and newspapers and things of this sort. And we filed numerous legal briefs and court cases as academics trying to help courts understand how the issues that were being presented to them. And I also started to maintain a presence on social media. I do on this date innovation history and on Twitter, identifying, you know, the anniversaries of when patents issued on important technologies and important developments in our economy. And as a result of the center that I helped found and the activities we did, I also became much more engaged with the policy and legal debates because people became even more aware of me. So I've been invited to testify 5 times before the United States Congress, both in the U.S. Senate and the U.S. House of Representatives on proposed patent legislation. And this testimony was fun and challenging at times. And I regularly meet with staff members and other people employed in the United States government who assist legislatures and agencies, such as at the U.S. Patent Office, the Federal Trade Commission, the U.S. Department of Justice, the National Institutes of Standards and Technologies, and other agencies to discuss with them the important issues of why we protect patents and how and why intellectual property is fundamental to driving our innovation economy and to growing our society and to making possible our lives today. I've also, you know, regularly engaged in publishing op-eds in newspapers throughout the United States. I think I published about 12 to 15 op-eds in last year alone on important topics and important issues in copyright disputes and patent disputes. And I continue my work through various organizations. So as I said, I stepped away from the center that I founded at my law school, but I continue to now do work as the chair of the Forum for Intellectual Property and as a senior fellow at an organization known as the Hudson Institute. I'm a visiting intellectual property fellow at the Heritage Foundation. I'm co-director of the Technology Innovation Intellectual Property Program at the Classical Liberal Institute at NYU School of Law. I do all of these things because I love it. I love what I do. It's important, it's valuable, it's work, it's hard work at times, as other panelists, I think, effectively conveyed. But when you love it, it's work that's worth doing. And I continue, of course, in my primary job as an academic, which I deeply love. This is my 18th year as an academic. I teach every year my patent law course. This semester I'm teaching patent law for the 19th time. I wouldn't give it up for the world. And I also teach kind of the core property course and other courses in my law school. And I've continued to work as an academic despite doing all this policy and legal work. I published 22 full-length journal articles and about 17 book chapters and essays over the years. This year, I have 3 more articles coming out and a book chapter. And what's really kind of key about this, and I'm really most proud about, is that I've done all of this without compromising my integrity and actually being very open about my objectivism. I have a quote from Ayn Rand hanging on my wall in my office at my law school, and people know that I'm an objectivist. And it deeply informs my work. It's not at the front and center of it every day, but it deeply drives what I do and why I think it matters. So in this sense, I've used objectivist principles in my personal life, my professional life, to really achieve a flourishing life as an academic and as someone engaged in the legal and policy debates about intellectual property in the United States. So I hope I've given you a sense of what it might be like to be a law professor and someone who does work in this area. And I'm looking forward to hearing from my other panelists. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Ayn Rand Institute Live podcast. Subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you listen. You can also find us on YouTube. If you like this content, please share or leave us a review. For more information, go to AynRand.org.